Would you like to play a game? It's the Film Threat Podcast live from E3 in Los Angeles. Welcome to the Film Threat Podcast. I'm Chris Gore, joined by Anthony Ray Bench.
How's it going, everybody?
And we are at E3 in Los Angeles, which I think is a good opportunity for us to talk about video game movies and movies based on video games and games based on movies and the like.
Yep.
Yeah. You have a lot to add. Okay, so E3 is the Electronic Entertainment Expo.
Yes, and the first one was in 1994.
Yes, and I mean, it's I guess it's sort of an offshoot of the CES show in a way. It's, and maybe they're sister shows, but E3 is a video game show that was, previous to this year, not open to the public.
Mm-hmm.
It was only open to industry. In my time that I spent when I was at G4 TV on Attack of the Show, I was occasionally part of the team that would cover E3.
Yeah.
But regardless of whether I was part of that team, I've just always come to E3 by sneaking in through whatever industry credentials I could scrounge up at the time. So.
And I've always wanted to go.
Yeah. So, yeah. So Anthony's always wanted to go. But this is the first year they've actually opened it up to the public, which is really fascinating. So you can actually purchase a limited number of badges. I believe that they released about 15,000 badges to the public, which now E3 is crowded as fuck. I mean, this is insanely crowded. So,
and even worse, like, everybody is like looking at their phone and taking pictures at all the trailers they're playing. So I've like bumped into so many people. Like, I literally have bruises on my arm. It's insane.
It's weird to see how the E3 show has changed. A couple of things. One, you know, the inclusion of course, fans can now buy tickets, which I think is a double-edged sword. It's a good thing because I think they should have always opened it up to fans, but it's a bad thing because I don't think they knew the response. So when you see like how crowded it is, I mean, this is Comic-Con, you know, in San Diego type of crowd. It's pretty nuts. So, and you can hear how loud it is. So, but also now they're selling merch at the show, which is interesting. Different booths have merch for their various game properties.
And from what you told me, there's a severe lack of free stuff.
No, I think we've done okay on the free stuff. See, here's the thing. I get all excited about, oh, they're giving stuff away for free. And then when I get this stuff home, I'm like, why did I care so much about this garbage?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why did I wait in line for an hour for a hat?
We literally waited 90 minutes for a Mario hat. I'm never going to wear it out in public.
Well, I was multitasking because I was actually working while I was standing in line. So
fair enough.
I try to use my time wisely that way. So I mean, like, just as a gamer growing up, I was into games. My first game system was an Odyssey 2.
Nice.
So, and then before that, actually, I had, that was the first game system I got. One before that I had, which didn't really work all that well, was one of the earlier Atari systems where you had to tape. You could play it on a black and white TV, but you had to tape like a screen to the front of the TV. I even forget the name. What was the name of that? But then Odyssey 2 was, and I love the Odyssey 2 because it had this space war game, which basically had TIE fighters in it. And it also had a keyboard, which was really cool. This sort of, you know, press keyboard. It was very cheesy, but no, I've always been a gamer and, you know, a PC gamer as well. Played all of the LucasArts X-Wing games, X-Wing and TIE Fighter, and all the other, I don't know. I think the Lucasfilm games have been great because they're really, of course, using the Star Wars property. There was Dark Forces. There's so many of them, and they just, like, I don't know. I think LucasArts has had some of the best games.
Oh, I agree. My mom always said the darkest moment in her life was the day that I realized you had to use quarters to play the arcades. Because when I was a kid, I would just sit there and I thought that I was playing them. I thought that they were free. So I would just push the buttons and I thought I was doing stuff. I didn't know any better. When I was 4 years old, for Christmas, I got a Nintendo. And there's a videotape of it I opened up a present and I got Super Mario 3, but I was smart enough to know that you needed a Nintendo system. And I literally was having a meltdown, like a four-year-old meltdown. I was like, but I need the tape player. I need the tape player. I was on the verge of tears. And then, you know, my
And the great part about it is we're going to post this video on the Film Threat Twitter.
Luckily, my grandfather gave me this big, box, and I instantly knew what it was, and I tore it up, and it was one of the best moments of my life. I will never forget it. I loved my original Nintendo, and I've been a gamer all my life. And you mentioned the LucasArts games. I had the LucasArts bundle that came with a demo of Dark Forces, but it came with Rebel Assault, Rebel Assault 2.
Oh, Rebel Assault was great. Even though it was like a shooter on a track.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I remember having Rebel Assault for, I think it was like the Sega CD 32X.
Yeah.
That's a deep cut if you're a gamer. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I used to, when I had the space, I used to collect game systems.
Mm-hmm.
So I was buddies with a guy from Atari who sent me, no lie, a refrigerator-sized box. I gave him $40. He said, just pay for shipping, and I'll send you a box. He sent me a giant refrigerator-sized box filled with every game they had. I'm talking about Atari 2600 and the system, new in box, and prototype games that they'd never released that had black and white covers.
Oh, wow.
It was really bizarre. So, yeah, but what I mean, the one thing, I mean, we should talk about how the video game industry and the film industry intersect.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because every major movie that comes out has an accompanying video game. We were looking at the Spider-Man game, the new Spider-Man game here at E3, which looks amazing. I mean, it looks incredible. The gameplay is very similar to the Arkham series of Batman games with, you know, that combos where you're punching. And what's weird is now we've seen full circle game movies and franchises influence games, and now games influencing movies. A few weeks ago, we talked about that King Arthur film.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Right, right. But that King Arthur Guy Ritchie movie completely stole from the Arkham games.
Yeah, yeah.
This sort of combo fighting aspect. It was interesting. So, I mean, you look at now, and also, I mean, one of the most successful filmmakers of all time, Steven Spielberg, whatever you think of his movies, they're connected. I mean, he's a big gamer.
Yeah.
He is a huge, huge gamer. Famously has a room at Amblin Entertainment filled with stand-up arcade systems. And he's the new film that's coming out this fall.
Ready Player One.
Ready Player One is, of course, Steven Spielberg. I think it's he's no other director could really do justice to that book. The book is incredible.
I have yet to read it.
Oh, it's so good. Do yourself a favor and read it.
I hear excellent things.
Yeah, so Ready Player One is very much, it's sort of like Willy Wonka with games, but pop culture references all over the place. And no one but someone of Steven Spielberg's stature could bring together all of the properties and all of the licensed characters and references and music and other movies and whatnot that are contained within Ready Player One. It's filled with all these references, but it's used in a really clever way that if you have not read the book, I highly recommend the book. And I think that Spielberg's the perfect match for that. But what's interesting about the games industry, because I've had my feet in many, in many places, right? Film industry, the games industry. I worked on a video game magazine in the 90s while I was doing Film Threat. Film Threat's done, we did even a cover story. We've done cover stories on games. We've covered that sort of connection between games and movies, right? Like I was even a fan of the old, I don't know if you remember these, the old full motion video games by Digital Pictures.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Sewer Shark and Night Trap.
Yep, Night Trap.
Night Trap,
awesome.
which caused a lot of controversy.
Oh yeah.
And so I was a fan of those games. I thought, well, one of these days we're gonna see games that are as good as movies. And I believe we have, like, when you look at something like BioShock.
Yeah.
Which wasn't Gore Verbinski, was attached to do the production design on BioShock's incredible. It's one of the few video games, along with Earthbound, that at the end I got teary-eyed. I'm not going to say I full-on cried, but at the end of BioShock, man, it's really emotional.
Yeah.
And Earthbound is an old Super NES RPG game that has the music for it's amazing. And I don't even like that kind of game, and I played it to the end. It's about this group of kids investigating aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure you can find Earthbound videos on the internet, because now I really just don't have enough time to play games. So here's what I do now, is I'll go on YouTube and I'll actually watch videos of games I used to play, which I know that's like a big thing now with like Twitch, people watching other people play video games. And just because I've got such a busy, I'm just juggling projects and a job and whatnot, like, I just don't have the kind of disposable time to play games. So,
and video games take so long these days.
Right, yeah. The commitment is just not there. Which
is
why,
like, back in the day, you could beat a game in like 2 hours.
Right, but what I like now is I tend to go for like the puzzle games or just pick it up and I start shooting and whatever. But yeah, I miss when I had the kind of time to be able to play a game like an Earthbound or like a Star Control 2, which I had for the 3DO, which I thought was incredible. But it's like I've seen, and there's another game. What's that game? Do you remember? I think it was for the PS1 that Tommy Tallarico did the music for, that the music was so good. It was called MDK. Remember MDK?
Yeah.
Look it up. MDK, the music that Tommy Tallarico did for that game is as epic as anything that I think John Williams has ever done. So I'm sure Tommy Tallarico is not listening to this podcast, but I'm a big fan of him because I think that you see a lot of people from the games industry that I think that they, I feel like the artists that are in the games industry, whether they're writers, whether they're composers, whether they're voice actors, I don't think that the games industry gets as much respect as the film industry. Film industry is really ego-driven. When you look at the tech world, it's not, at least in the game side, it's not as ego-driven, I believe. So I would say that the artists are just as creative, just not as egomaniacal, if that makes sense. And what's ironic is that games make more, I mean, like, excuse me, like, we're at the end of E3. This is the very end. So both Anthony and I are like, we should have recorded this podcast at the beginning because energy-wise,
well, originally we were like going to record it yesterday, but I kind of ruined that plan. Yesterday, I left my badge in the car.
Yeah, rookie mistake. You leave your badge in the car as we're going to the train station.
Yeah.
But the funniest thing today was when we were on the train and we see this Korean War veteran.
Oh, God.
And Anthony is sitting in the disabled / senior citizen seat.
Yeah.
And offered, you were very nice about it. You offered to give up your seat to this man. He had to be in his 70s or 80s. And he was Korean War veteran. He had his hat. He was going to the American Legion Hall. And he said, well, what are you doing? And you said, I'm going to a video game show.
I didn't say it like that.
It was the funniest thing to see you talking to this Korean War vet who fought for our country in a real... He wasn't playing Call of Duty. He was in Call of Duty.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
And you were like, I'm going to a video game show. And then here's this like grizzled war veteran who did... he used all of his energy not to roll his eyes when you said, I'm 31 and I'm going to a video game show.
It wasn't that bad, Chris.
It wasn't that bad, but no, it just
hardcore.
Made me... I had to look away because I wanted to laugh. I thought this contrast was so funny. It's like, I'm going to go to a place where we play war games and you actually fought in a war.
I'm not a big fan of the war games, but...
But back to my point, real quick, because this is what we're all kind of like, we're surrounded by, we've got the Square Enix booth, Xbox is just within eyesight, there's Marvel versus Capcom, Infinite, Assassin's Creed, I can see, we're just surrounded by it all. There's no good place to record in here. But what I was saying is that opening weekend of like a Call of Duty game comes out makes way more money than any of the biggest movies at the box office.
Oh, yeah.
More people will purchase a game on that opening weekend and also get your season pass, your downloads, you know, your extra DLC, as they call it, downloadable content. Like that, I mean, games make more money than movies, in a sense. And a lot of them have film-like experiences.
Yeah,
so,
it's
all about great storytelling. So, I love when you see interactivity in games collide, like that game we saw, what's it called, Detroit?
Yeah.
It's a new game for the PS4.
Yeah, it's basically you create your own movie. It's you make your own choices. You control a character.
You control a character that's like basically this rebel, and you don't know is he a good guy, is he a bad guy, but
it's all
investigating.
Up to you.
It all starts where he's investigating a murder, and then there are branches and choices you can make based on that. It will give you a probability of success of your mission.
Yeah.
Is effectively what it is. But what you're basically watching is a movie where every discussion there are stakes. Every choice there are stakes, and you are the one that chooses how things play out. So
yeah.
So I don't know. I'm just like I have always been a game and a film fan, so I do have like sort of fractured pop culture interests.
Yeah.
You know, I think any of us these days. I don't think that's I think that's more common now. People that are also into comic books and graphic novels.
It's all kind of melding together.
And movies.
In a very satisfying way.
And TV and franchises and whatnot. So, I mean, as we walk around here, too, there's so many, games based on movies.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we mentioned the Spider-Man game. There's Fractured Butthole. You got to tell me about that one because you had me. I have to get it because it's a South Park game.
Yes, so it's the sequel to South Park Stick of Truth. And I loved South Park Stick of Truth. You're basically playing as the new kid in South Park. And the first one was a spoof on Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones. You're this chosen kid that has a magical butthole where your magic is basically your farts and how you can control them. This one is a spoof on superheroes. The kids basically decide that they're going to stop pretending to play Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings and start playing Marvel and DC, and they're going to have a civil war where they're fighting each other over franchises. It's really kind of
just like people do on the internet?
Yes.
Marvel's better than DC.
Exactly.
DC's better than Marvel.
And it's also a poke of how everybody's trying to tie their universes together. You have to watch the trailer. The trailer is the funniest thing. It's talking about how Token, the black character in South Park, won't get his movie until everybody else does, which is a clear little poke at Black Panther. There's another little jab at one of the characters isn't going to get a movie; he's going to get a TV show. It's really,
you mean
really
like
funny.
The Flash.
Yeah. It's really good stuff.
Well, I mean, Matt Stone and Trey Parker have always been great at skewering pop culture, political figures, corporations.
And they're gamers, too. They're legitimate gamers. They have episodes dedicated to games.
Well, it is. I mean, like, for me, gaming is a great... I mean, it's like sort of like the, like, I don't want to think for the next 2 hours.
Yep.
And so I don't know. That's why I guess I've always loved to relax with games. The game that I've been playing recently, which I just sort of return to every once in a while because it's a quick get in, get out, is Battlefront.
Yeah.
Which now we saw people playing Battlefront 2.
Yep.
Battlefront is, of course, the Star Wars multiplayer game where it's...
Yep.
I mean, it's team-based in a sense, but it just is different sort of aspects and planets in the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. And you're either, in the original, the new Battlefront, it's you're Rebel or Imperial. The Battlefront 2, they're expanding it to different worlds. They're including, levels based on Star Wars prequel movies and other characters. I guess Rey from, of course, the upcoming Last Jedi Star Wars Episode 8.
Yeah, it's prequel trilogy, original trilogy, and they're going to have aspects of the new movies,
the Disney era, sequel trilogy. Like, there was all a discussion on the internet, which I thought was really interesting, like this spoiler theory that Rey makes her own lightsaber because the lightsaber that's used in the Battlefront 2 video is different than Luke's lightsaber.
Interesting
right?
enough, it looks like Obi-Wan's lightsaber.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think that...
I think people are looking too much into it.
You can read way, way too into it. But that, I mean, what? And then also, so what are some of the other things that you saw at the show that you think have been really cool?
Well, I actually got to play Marvel vs. Capcom Infinity, which is like right to our left on a big screen. I got to play as Ryu and Thanos. I'm a big Marvel vs. Capcom fan. I love Street Fighter.
I don't know. I just say. I like that Street Fighter. I like that kind of game style.
Yeah.
I hate when they mix that stuff up.
I love it.
Like X-Men versus Star Trek, which was actually a comic book.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not a fan. I remember that comic book.
It's always done just as a cash grab to just capitalize. Like Spider-Man versus Superman, which happened.
Yeah, I remember seeing Street Fighter versus X-Men, or X-Men versus Street Fighter. When I was a kid, and that just blew my mind. It was two of my favorite things coming together. And I get that it's cash grab, but I've been playing these games since I was a kid, and to play the newest one was just incredible. It was a lot of fun. I think people are going to love it. One thing that pisses me off, though, there are no X-Men characters, and there are no Fantastic Four characters. That irritates me. I think that's...
Oh, because you know why. Because Marvel is excising them. Or maybe they're sidelining them for Phase 4.
Yep. No.
Phase 4? Oh, Phase 4?
Yeah, yeah. I highly doubt that. Another game we both played was Mario Odyssey, Super Mario Odyssey, for the Nintendo Switch.
Yes.
It was fun.
Can I just say it was the one and only game I played at this entire show? Was that game?
The lines were too long.
Yeah, lines are too long. We've just been watching a lot. Plus, this is for me. This show, I ran into Adam Sessler actually.
Yep.
At the lobby of the Marriott Hotel, and this is where I reconnect with a lot of people I only see once a year. My friends from the games industry. So, Adam, what's weird? Like when I was working on Attack of the Show back in the day. That Adam, whenever Adam and I got together, it was always he wanted to talk to me about movies and I wanted to talk to him about games. We'd have this huge discussion about like, oh, what about this movie? He'd ask, what about this movie? I'm like, oh, what about this game? So it's weird how like just reconnecting and seeing what everyone's up to. I mean, this is that's what's fun about this show. Now, just like the film industry has independent movies, the games industry also has its share of indie games. Mm-hmm. And indie games to me have been among some of the most creative. I mean, we've seen it come out like on Xbox Live with those the arcade and these download games, some of these smaller games. The PlayStation also has its own version of that. And indie games are incredibly popular. And we're in this recording this in this little lounge area pavilion where we're surrounded by some indie games. So those to me I really love because you just see a lot of the games that are put out by major companies, they're really based on a game mechanic or style that has been done before. Yeah. First-person shooter, side-scroller, RPG, adventure game style. What I love about indie games is just as indie film, you'll see a lot of risk-taking.
Yep.
So I love that aspect of indie games.
And it's a smaller development team.
Yeah, usually smaller teams. Obviously, the budget is smaller. I mean, you know, but when you see the creativity come out, it's just like when you see a really good, indie movie, right? It's sort of like, it's not perfect, it's flawed, but we're seeing. And then there's also another pavilion that's in eyesight. It's colleges where the students have actually created their own indie games, including a game, you can look this up, called Star Cats. There is a game called Star Cats. You're a cat person. Anthony?
Barely.
You're a cat. Aren't you a cat? Look, I'm a cat person. I don't currently own a cat.
Yeah.
So I just have...
I like my cats. Let's just put it that way.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, you're like Captain Picard who doesn't like kids.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like anybody else's cats. Yeah,
you only like your own cats. Yeah. Okay. All right. But this... The show is... It really is sort of a race to try and see everything.
Yeah. And I think we did a pretty good job.
Well, I think it's fitting while we're here at E3 that we should talk about the best video games that were made into movies. And is there really enough to even make a list? There certainly couldn't be a top 10. I mean, it is sort of almost like a curse that every time they go to turn a really interesting property into interesting game property into a movie, it just misses the mark, right? Like almost every single time out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just bizarre.
We compiled a list, and the list, by no means, these movies are not good, but they're the best of the shitty.
Well, let's talk about, before we get to that list, the best video game movies ever made, we should talk about what are the games that should be made into movies. I think that there are some incredible games out there that would actually make a good film.
I agree.
All right, let's hear it.
So, number three, I think God of War would make a fantastic movie.
It would be, it would be like what the Conan movies couldn't do.
Yeah.
Right? It would be incredibly bloody.
Yeah, yeah. The story of Kratos in the God of War games is just, I think it's time to bring back the Greek mythology and do something really gruesome and really gory and just do a really good journey movie. Like, just a really good, like, you have a quest, you have a character that needs to fulfill this quest, and just have a character that's just relentless in carrying out that quest. We haven't had that in a while, and I think God of War could be that movie.
I could see that being hard R, too.
Yeah, oh yeah, it has to be hard R, has to be.
All right, what's the next one that's on your list?
Number two is BioShock.
Well, yeah, I mean, we talked about that earlier.
Yep.
That game was in development to turn into a film.
Yeah.
Gore Verbinski, of course. And if you've played any of the BioShock games, the production design is incredible. It's sort of this futuristic vision that's from the 50s,
yeah.
Right? It's like, it's sort of like design kind of stopped then, and it's like if futuristic things existed, but with a 1950s aesthetic and in an underwater city.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. There are shocking twists and turns in the game.
Yep.
That I think would make an incredible film.
And for those who aren't familiar with the plot, it's basically the world's smartest people go underwater into this like society called, or the city called Rapture, where they could experiment without laws holding them back, without religion holding them back. They can do whatever to progress science. I love the idea of doing that in a film.
And then things go wrong, of course.
And things go horribly wrong.
Yeah, so in a sense, they were trying to create a utopia.
Yes, yeah.
And failed to do so.
Yeah. And number one on the list is a video game that it boggles my mind that they haven't turned it into a movie, Halo.
Especially the first Halo and the second Halo, I feel are just so epic in scale.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like a lot of things that are, well, this is kind of like Star Wars. It's not Star Wars at all. It's very different from that, but it's a huge military conflict against an outside threat.
Yep.
And it's on the everything from, I mean, the one, I actually bought the soundtrack to the Halo game.
It's an amazing
because the music,
soundtrack.
The music
so
is epic. And that was, of course, Peter Jackson was developing it.
Mm.
And the guy, his name escapes me, but he ended up directing District 9.
Neil Blomkamp.
Yeah, yeah. Neil Blomkamp was supposed to do the Halo movie, and that deal fell through, which I have no idea why.
I don't either.
Let me ask, why do you think video game movies fail for the most part? You know, we talked about these games that should be made into films, but why is it that video game movies fail? Because I'm thinking like the Halo, like I could just go and watch the cutscenes, and they even allow options where you can go back and just watch the cutscenes.
Yeah.
But why do they fail for the most part?
Well, I think especially in the 90s when the video game adaptations were first coming out, you had filmmakers who didn't understand the properties. You had people that had no respect. You had people that didn't play the games, that just...
So you're saying decision makers who weren't gamers.
Exactly.
Which I feel like is why we have such great comic book movies today.
Yeah.
Because the decision makers, either greenlighting the films or overseeing the production of comic book movies, read comic books, so they understand the source material. It's perhaps that the video game industry is in such its in such an infancy with regard, you know, as compared to comic books and whatnot, that that there's no one in that position that could really say, I'm going to green light this, because as a young child, I used to play this game. There's got to be someone like at a studio level who's an executive who can say, we're going to do this justice.
Yeah, and maybe we aren't there yet. Like, maybe...
No, I think we're not there yet.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty definitively, we're not there yet. Because even when you talk about the best video game movies, which we talked about not on the podcast, we just sort of put together a quick list so we could discuss it, it's hard to come up with them. And then there are, like, other sort of genres, like, I mean, War Games with Matthew Broderick, that's not a video game movie, but it's sort of rooted in the world of gaming.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of... there are a lot of films like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like the documentary about all the Nintendo cartridges buried in the desert.
Atari cartridges.
Atari
for the
cartridges.
ET game.
Yeah.
I love that documentary.
Atari cartridges. The ET Atari. It has been a long convention, can I just say. We're both sitting here like on this couch in this air, just exhausted.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the Atari cartridges. How could I forget? From ET. So
I want to bring up something like when I say, you know, we have filmmakers that don't respect the source material. For instance, I mentioned I'm a big fan of Street Fighter. The whole concept of Street Fighter is you have these characters that are fighting in a tournament. That's the whole, like, that's the whole story of the game. The movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme has no tournament. It involves a bunch of characters coming together to invade a country and rescue hostages, which has nothing to do with the video games. I mean, that's all that. That's the 90s, like, summed up in comic books, in video games. You have filmmakers that ignore the source material and just do whatever is popular at the time. That's why I don't think we have good video game movies right now. It's just, it's not time yet. Hopefully in like 10 years, we'll have executives that understand if we make something that is true and respects the fan base, there we have it.
Well, what's the next list?
So we have three of the best video game adaptations. And again, these aren't good movies, but they're the best we have.
Okay.
So number three, I have Doom. And it's a terrible movie, but it has The Rock.
I can't believe Doom is number three on your list.
What would be number three on your list?
I don't have a list because I don't think they exist. I mean, seriously, like, these are movies that, I'm serious.
Yeah.
I can't think of, like, well, there's one I know we're going to talk about that, like, I actually agree is a good movie, but it's still not great.
Like I said, these movies aren't good.
But Doom, I mean, first of all, I love the Doom game.
Yeah.
That Doom game is frightening. I mean, you're going around corners. Just the sound effects alone are just frightening.
Well,
And I don't know. I don't see how you capture that kind of mood in a movie. Like, it really wasn't. The Doom games originally had nothing to do with any characters. There are some games that actually, you know, character is a big part of it. The character in Doom is the player.
Yeah.
Right? So, I don't know how, what, you know...
The Marine.
It's basically about, you know, a portal to hell erupts and creatures come out at this base in outer space. So.
Yeah, the Doom movie is loosely based on Doom 3, which is a game that I love. And they took out the hell element...
Right.
Which, you know, that's another example of we're going to take out the core element of the game. And I don't know why. Like, maybe they thought the whole hell thing was hokey, but it's a part of the Doom universe. Like I said, the only good thing about that movie is The Rock. I thought he was good in it. The Rock is good in everything, I think. So number two is Silent Hill. Another movie that's crap, but at least it was very atmospheric and very... Just the look of the film was very true to the game. The story was crap, but it looked like a Silent Hill game. So I'll give it that. I cannot stress enough, these are not good movies.
No, I'm looking at you right now, just like in disbelief of like, this is the like when we had an offline conversation, what movies are we going to discuss? It's like, I don't have a best video game movie or even a list of best video game movies.
Because there aren't any. Like we are literally scraping the bottom of the barrel.
There are good movies. Well, we'll get to that. There are good movies in the world of gaming or games.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. And the number one.
The number one
video game movie is...
Mortal Kombat.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
The Mortal Kombat movie, it loosely sort of fit that there was a tournament.
Yeah.
Right? It kind of pitted characters against each other.
It had that awesome techno song.
Johnny Cage is good and likable. It almost had sort of a Star Wars vibe to it with like this trio that they centered it on. And they came up with at least some sort of logic to make it work in a reality in a movie universe.
Yeah.
So I do believe that's probably one of the best video game movies, if not the best video game movie made. But it's good. It's
not great.
It's not one of those ones I go to like, I want to watch Mortal Kombat the movie. I'd almost rather play an earlier version of Mortal Kombat.
I agree. It's a fun movie, but it's not good. Special shout out to the second one, Mortal Kombat Annihilation. It's one of my least favorite movies of all time. Funny story about that. So when I was a kid, I was a big fan of the Mortal Kombat movie because it's basically for a kid. So I was really looking forward to renting the second one. When I rented it, I thought it was a bootleg because none of the characters were played by the same actors from the first one. I literally thought that it was a bootleg.
Like a bad adaptation?
No. I thought that like somebody put together like a production on their own. I thought it was a fake. I thought it was...
Oh, like a fan film?
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what I thought. I thought it was that bad. It's a terrible movie. It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It's garbage. But anyways, movies that involve video games.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah. Now, this is actually a much more positive list.
Yes.
These are movies that involve the world of gaming or video games. So they're not based on a game in particular, mm-hmm. but they're centered on the world of technology and gaming.
Yep.
And these are properties that were movies really first, and then sort of borrowed elements from games. So let's go through that list.
So I have number three, War Games.
Yeah, War Games. I mean, War Games is a...
It's a fun movie.
Do you want to play a game?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's also got a really interesting theme about, you know, mutually assured destruction.
Yeah.
It's...
something we're facing these days.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's also just a fun adventure. I mean, it is a movie for kids, and I saw it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that one, it also kind of holds up. I mean, Matthew Broderick is very likable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, that one, yes, very good choice.
And actually, I couldn't decide between War Games and The Wizard, and The Wizard is not a good game, it's not a good movie, but it's a movie I grew up with, you know, the Fred Savage and Christian Slater movie.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and what's her name from Rilo Kiley? It's a movie that I watched so much as a kid, and now that I watch as an adult, I can appreciate it as being a terrible movie, but it has that nostalgia factor. But it's a movie about video games. Number two on the list, Tron.
Well, of course, Tron, the original Tron.
Yes.
I remember like seeing that movie and talking with my dad about that movie. And my dad was a computer programmer who worked in the auto industry, and he'd take me into work to play computer games.
Yeah.
And I remember, he sat me down to play a text-based Star Trek game on one of his computers, and I remember getting so excited when it said, "You have left dry dock." And I thought that was so exciting, like, ah! But it was text-based.
Yeah.
That's how unsophisticated games were at the time, sort of. But I remember him telling me, like, you know, Tron, all the language in Tron, like, you know what a byte is, or you know what a RAM is. And so all the language, what I really enjoyed about Tron was, first of all, it's a Wizard of Oz type thing. He goes into this You know, it's here's the his problems in the real world. He works them out in the fantasy world. You can look at it one of two ways. Was it a dream when he kicked back, or did that, you know, was that all stuff he was working it out in his head, or did all that stuff really happen? So it had a Wizard of Oz kind of structure to it. But it really also referenced technology at the time. Everything was based on something. That neutron is not on this list. It's terrible. There's nothing delightful about that neutron. It's kind of creepy and weird. And it didn't even, I thought what I didn't
I
like
it.
About that. No, I did not like Tron Legacy.
I liked it.
What I did not like about it is it didn't like the old Tron used language about computers and technology, and then sort of anthropomorphized aspects of technology.
Well,
they missed an opportunity. There should have been pirated software, and they could have been actual pirates.
Yeah.
Right? There could have been all this stuff, like they could have taken things that are common because now we're more technologically aware than we've ever been, and they could have used terminology and tech terms and anthropomorphized it in a fun way, and it just created a weird universe that didn't have rules. And what I liked about the original Tron, it at least had rules.
No.
Right? You're going to create a fantasy world in contrast to a real world, have a set of rules and stick to those rules. And it did not, that new Tron did not do that. And plus, that lead actor is completely forgettable and had no personality whatsoever. I'm just not a fan of his.
I disagree with you on that. Look, the Tron Legacy is an inferior movie. I'm not.
Even though it had Jeff Bridges, who I love.
I thought he was fantastic in it. He played kind of like an Obi-Wan hippie.
I don't know. I did not. It didn't work for me.
Tron Legacy worked for me, but it's an inferior movie. I agree with pretty much everything you say.
It didn't have a story. Well, if you agree with that, what I'm saying, it's. I mean, you know, it did.
But
I missed the delight of the first film. The first film, yes, it's hokey, and it's mostly hand drawn and hand animated.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that Tron was made by computers. I mean, it's sort of they use vector graphics, and then they drew on it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look anything up about the making of the original Tron, it's basically
it's fascinating.
It's a cartoon.
Yeah. No,
because I used to own this really big box set laser disc of it that had all this stuff in it, all these extras, but now since all that stuff's on DVD.
Yeah.
So
I think they shied away from using like actual like computer technology in the second one because technology moves so fast they didn't want to make an outdated movie. I like the second one. I don't love it. I think it's an okay movie. If I were to review it now, I would probably give it a 6 out of 10. But I don't hate it like you do.
And then what's interesting is so they made this movie based on the world of games, right? And then they made a video game based on that movie.
And I love the video game.
It's so well, I'm talking about the original Tron.
Yeah.
And there have been some decent games. There was one recently, I think it might have been for the PS3 or I had it on the Xbox 360 that was actually a Tron game that I liked.
I hated the Tron game. I hated that Tron game so much.
I like the racing aspect of it. I like that racing part.
Light cycles.
And like the light cycle stuff was great.
Yeah.
So, all right, now let's get to the
number one
movie based on a game, but it's a movie that's based in the realm of gaming.
Yes. It's got to be Wreck-It Ralph.
And I agree with you on
Wreck-It
this.
Wreck-It Ralph is such a great movie.
So entertaining and references so many different games.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, all the different, and had, of course, a delightful Disney story.
Yep.
It's, you know, like, I really feel that that's the thing that's missing with all of these video game movies. For some reason, there are video games with great stories, but I don't think that we've seen a movie based on a video game that was able to translate the great aspects of that story. I think they get too caught up maybe in trying to please the fans, a lot of fan service, and not really focusing on the story first.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. Wreck-It Ralph is just this amazing story about being yourself and embracing who you are. And I fell in love with that movie the first time I watched it. I still watch it every once in a while. I think it came out, in 2011, 2012, right?
Sure.
Yeah. A lot of movies from 2011, 2012 are just collecting dust in my collection. That's still a movie I bust out every once in a while.
Well, that's about it for this episode of the Film Threat Podcast. Anthony, thanks for being on.
Thank you for bringing me to E3. It's a dream come true.
I you know what? I made your dream come true.
You did.
I think you owe me a drink for that.
I bought you a Diet Coke, motherfucker.
That's true. Okay, so we're going to be hitting the hotel bars and hanging out with all the exhausted folks here at the E3 show. Follow us at Film Threat. At Film Threat on Twitter, Instagram, on Tumblr. Visit filmthreat.com every day for new reviews of indie films and major theatrical releases. And listen to the Film Threat podcast every week. Subscribe on iTunes. Subscribe on your Android app, Android device, and SoundCloud, wherever.
Stitcher,
all that, whatever. Just give us a subscribe. Give us a like. Write a review. Write a review on iTunes of the Film Threat podcast, which will help bump us up in our respective category on iTunes.
Tell all your friends. Tell your relatives.
And this, of course, this is the part of the show where no one actually listens. So if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Film Threat International Headquarters, 5042 Wilshire Boulevard, PMB 1500, Los Angeles, California, 90036, I'll send you back some stickers, some Film Threat stickers, for free, just the cost of a stamp. And with that, let's get out of here.
Ladies and gentlemen, attendees of E3 2017, it's 5 o'clock, Thursday afternoon, and the show is officially closed. Please make your way to the exit. We will see you next year, June 12th, for E3 2018. Thanks for coming. Have a safe year.